Let's go to tradition five. Stretch it out. So you, how many you want us to go, 1 hour or what?
An hour and 20.
An hour 20. Okay, we're to go an hour 20. Okay, tradition five. A relationship has but one primary purpose, to love each other and to serve as an expression of God's love. We have a preamble that Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of attraction. I want my marriage to be an attraction. I love to be married. I love to be married to Dave. I have enjoyed my relationship. I love the freedom that I have in my relationship. I love it. And I want my relationship to be something that somebody else would want. It's just a program of attraction. And I don't know about you, but nothing makes me more uncomfortable than to be around somebody who's having arguments in their relationship, and I have to sit there and listen to it. Now, I don't know if that makes you uncomfortable, but it makes me uncomfortable, terribly uncomfortable. And what happens is I may have issue with Dave, and I may have a problem, but hopefully I have enough self-control today that I can wait till we get in the car or wait till we get home in order to talk about it. So I just want you to know that it's not cute to belittle your mate in public. It's not cute to criticize in public. I don't think any of that's cute. And the reason I feel like that is because when I am the one who's sitting with a couple doing that, I hate the way it feels. I absolutely hate the way it feels. I'm uncomfortable. I don't know what to do with myself. It's just, you know, other words, their relationship is not an expression of love. And the other thing is I can be working with somebody and sponsoring them. I'm sure everybody's had this experience. And then, you know, and it's not always just men being physical with women. Sometimes it's women being physical with men. This is not okay. Love is not punching you in the face and saying, I love you. That's not love. That is not an act of love. That is not an expression of love. That is an expression of violence and anger. And I can hear all the time, I'll be working with somebody and they'll say, but he loves me. What? He loves me. Well, maybe that's the way you like to be loved. Maybe that's all you think you're worth, is to be beat up on. But one of the things that is true, and it's not always true because nothing is, you know, always true, but what happens is people who are violent, I mean, they need a lot of help, and absolutely a lot of help. And sometimes the 12 steps is not enough. They absolutely need a lot of help. And what happens is sometimes we just need to do a little bit more. That's why the book tells us, you know, don't deny yourself going and getting the help you need. Absolutely go and get that help. So anyway, so that what happens is Dave and I, you know, we're not a reflection of each other. I'm me and Dave's him. But what happens is I love him. And because I love him, I respect him. And I don't want to do things in public. Now, do I say bad things about Dave to people that I know are going to listen to me? And of course. Of course. And he says bad things about me, I'm sure.
Yep.
But that we're going to do that. You know, you're going to do that because I'm going to, be mad or something like that. I mean, I'm not always sitting around, oh, singing his praises and never have a bad word to say. Of course not. I have not left the human race. You know, I am still a human. But what happens is I try to be, for it to be an expression of love. And I certainly don't hit him, throw things at him, and neither does he me. And never have I been afraid that he would ever do that. Because I feel like people who are in violent relationships, one of the main aspects of what I need for a relationship, maybe you don't need that, but what I need is to be safe. The thing that we're doing, which is safe and protected. Okay. The checklist for Tradition 5. Do we have a primary purpose and do we know what it is? And Dave and I have a primary purpose in this relationship, and it is to have an expression of God's love. I mean, I feel like sometimes I have to pinch myself to think that I have been in this relationship for 31 years and I am still so crazy about my husband. I just love that. And I know that that is a direct result of AA and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts. These 36 principles have allowed this to happen in my life. And I just, you know, and I want you guys to know that. And that's an expression of God's love and what I've been given and how grateful I am. Do I resort to emotional blackmail? Oh, I used to. If you loved me, you would. And Dave calls it girl tricks. I used to do girl tricks and do these little manipulative games to get what I want. Do I demand precise equality? You know what, gang? I know I'm 71 years old. I am not in most of your generations. Most of you can be my kids, a lot of you. But what happens is, I don't want equality. I don't want it. I want my doors opened. I want those things. And do I want to be able to, when I went into the workplace, do I want equality in the workplace? Absolutely. Because when I do a job and you do a job and it's equal, I want to be paid equal. Do I want to be in charge of everything and be opening Dave's door and all that? No, I don't want to do that. I want him to do that for me. So I don't want equality. You guys go do your women's lib. Drop your bras. Do whatever you want. I don't want it. I don't want it. I love being a girl, and I love being treated like one. I love it. I absolutely love it. Do I really understand that my troubles are of my own making? Well, I've been here 34 years, and after 34 years, I think I finally got it. That it is a spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. It's me. It is either my perception, whatever, but it's me. Do I express God's love in our relationship, and do I share it with others? I don't always express it to him and me. And sometimes when I'm talking to a good friend, I don't express it. But for the most part, I try to be an attraction. Am I patient and an uncritical listener? Thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and listening to tons of Fifth Steps, I have learned to be a better listener than I ever was when I got here. Can I see my partner through God's eyes or hear my partner through God's ears? The Bhagavad Gita, which is not AA-approved literature, but in the Bhagavad Gita, it's a Hindu Bible, it says in there, to love another person totally, we get to see the eyes of God. And I believe that to be true. I believe that there's not a greater gift than to be given the gift of love with whoever that's with your child, with your parents, whatever that love, whenever we have the gift of love, it is, I mean, the greatest of everything is love. It's the greatest. It's the most precious, precious gift we have, is the gift of love. Tradition 6.
Christian six, we ought never single-handedly endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our commitment to each other. That's fairly self-explanatory. It just says that I'm free to endorse whatever I want to for me, but that I don't have the right to endorse something for both of us, and nor does Polly. You know, I can't. We operate as a unit, so we have one bank account. All income goes into that bank account, so it is our money. It's not my money and her money. We have sponsored people. We used to sponsor a couple in California, and he and I was his sponsor, and he would come to me and tell me things that happened in their marriage. Polly was her sponsor, and she would go to Polly and tell Polly things that happened in their marriage. And it sounded like then when Polly and I would talk to each other, it sounded like we were talking about two completely different marriages. I mean, it's just what he said and what she said just didn't agree. So we just got to the point where if we were going to talk about their marriage, all four of us had to be together. And because otherwise, you know, and which by itself on the way by here, let me say that we all have to remember that when it comes to things like this, when we are getting a long drawn out story, you're only getting one side of it. You're only getting the person's side who is telling you. And I don't care how honest and how objective you try to be. I don't think it's possible to be objective. I think if I had observed what you were describing, I might have a different idea about what really happened than you do. And I don't say that critically. I think it's just unavoidable that happens. But anyway, they were trying to have some kind of a, you know, I have my bank account and she has hers. And that smacks of a lack of commitment to me. That smacks of a lack of trust to me. When they try to join their finances, they argue about it a lot. And I said, look, you know, money is theoretically is very simple. You know, you got $100. The bills have been paid. You got $100 left over. You each get $50 to share. And so what is causing the problem is that you are concerned that you're not going to get your 50. And what you really want is your 50 plus as much of his as you can get. And she wants the same thing. I mean, he wants the same thing. So, you know, you guys are, quit worrying about your 50. Worry about her 50. Make sure she gets her 50. And you make sure he gets his 50. And if you do that, where's the problem? You know? I mean, this is just another manifestation of selfishness and self-centeredness. You know, I want mine plus as much of yours as I can get. Well, that's just a routine alcoholic attitude. I mean, what's unusual about that? That's the way we are before we get here. And we have to learn differently. So, you know, and this tradition also says that our belief is that a partner ought not to try to be overly supportive of whoever their mate is, you know, either emotionally or spiritually or physically. You know, I am not going to work harder on Polly's program than she does. I'm not going to do it. You know, I mean, she needs to have the assurance, and so do I, that my sobriety is between me and God. Okay, my life, my sobriety, it's between me and God. And it can't depend on her. You know, Chamberlain used to say all the time, don't hang your sobriety on me. I have feet of clay. I will let you down. I won't mean to. And I'll be very unhappy when I do. I won't be pleased with me at all, but I will. I can't help it. I'm a human being. There will come a time when I'll just let you down. So it is between me and God. It's between her and God. You know, I don't know when Polly ought to call her sponsor. You know, I'm not going to tell her you need to call your sponsor. I don't know when she needs to call her sponsor. I'm not going to tell her you need to go to a meeting. I mean, it is not my responsibility to do that. And all that's going to do, you know what that's going to do? You know what it's going to do. It's just going to make her resentful. That's how resentments are born, telling somebody else how they ought to conduct their life. I mean, you are you, and you have to conduct your life to please yourself so that you're comfortable with you. If you cannot be yourself, what the hell's the point of anything if you can't be who you are? You know, you have to be able to be who you are. And so the important thing in protecting the relationship and its unity is just don't try to take responsibilities that aren't yours. Don't try to single-handedly endorse or finance or lend your family name to anything. God helps us when we need something beyond our own power. That's part of his love for us. I think God believes that to control us and to cripple would be to cripple us. And after all, that's why he gave us individual freedom, you know. He said, here's your life. You know, I give you your life. Live it any way you want to. Here's what I recommend, and his recommendation comes to us in many different ways. You know, there are many different paths to God. He says, this is what I recommend. You want to be happy and have a really good time? This is what I recommend. If you want to do it some other way, it's your choice. Do it. Anything I do to divert Polly's attention, or her dependence, rather, on God to me, will, I believe, harm her. I don't want her dependent on me. You know, my God, I'm sitting here saying, look, I'm a member of AA because I can't manage my own life. What the hell would ever make me think I could manage yours? If I could have done a better job managing lives, I certainly would have done it for myself, at least for me. So, I don't need to be needed in that way, and I don't want to be. I have, because of my own low, what I used to have was very low self-esteem, and because of that, I would try to do what I could to make myself indispensable so you wouldn't throw me away. But I don't need to do that anymore. And we encourage each other. We're interested in each other's growth, but we must allow the other the dignity to grow and perhaps to fail. You know, failure is a marvelous teacher, just a marvelous teacher. So we compliment one another. We are not each other's crutches, and we're proud of each other. We admire each other for different reasons. We learn a lot from each other. Polly is one of the kindest, most compassionate, most non-judgmental people I have ever known in my life. I don't know how many of you in here know anything about the sun signs, you know, astrology, but back when we were being ultra hip slick and cool in Southern California, there was an astrologer in Laguna Beach named Edmund Fernal, and Edmund did our charts for us. I mean, it was just absolutely it was the thing to do in those days. And Edmund did our charts, and Polly has no negative aspects in her chart at all. One side of her chart is totally blank, and so. I don't know, nor do I really care that much whether you believe in astrology or not. I just thought that was interesting because that's the way I experience her too. I used to just get really upset, you know, these little cheeky boos from some halfway house would call her up in the middle of the night, and I'd say, why don't you tell them to call you at a decent hour? She wouldn't do it. You know, she would take their calls no matter when they called, and she would just take my bitching and in stride and do what she did, which is wonderful. Khalil Gibran wrote about marriage in his book, The Prophet. He said, love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone, even as the strings of a lute are alone, although they quiver with the same music. It's a great line. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts, and stand together, yet not too near together. For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress tree grow not in each other's shadow. Polly mentioned Frank Fitzpatrick earlier today. He said one time, you know, if you two will plant yourselves firmly in the soil of AA, you will grow like two mighty oak trees, independent and strong. And one day we can all look up and see that their branches have intertwined, and you can no longer tell where one begins and the other ends. So the checklist for this tradition is, do I encourage and support my partner? Sure. What is motivating me when I try to be all things to my partner? Am I trying to create a dependency? And I'm just being a guy too, you know. I mean, all you women know that's how guys are, you know. They gotta know everything and be the big cheese. And can I hear God's voice when I'm screaming at Polly? Not usually. Do I allow my partner the dignity to fail? Sure. Sure. We all need to fail sometimes. Because we just, you know, I think God's tried every way he could think of to teach us something, and so he has to just trip us and make us fall in a mud puddle. Do I pretend to agree with my partner just to keep things going? Sometimes I don't disagree with her. When I don't particularly agree with her, but I don't openly disagree with her because the outcome either way is just not that important to me. You know, I'm not going to die on that hill. So, but I do not compromise myself and my integrity in that regard, nor do I expect her to. You know, I want you to be you. It's not necessary that I agree with you on everything. It's not important that I agree with you on everything. I cannot. I mean, it is expecting too much of me to agree with anybody on everything. Do I take responsibility for my own spiritual, emotional, and physical needs? I do. And I have some, you know, like I, for some strange reason, I got really hooked up in church about 5 years ago. I have no idea why. I didn't see it coming. I didn't mean to. I had no enthusiasm for it up to that moment. But this lady that Polly sponsors asked me one day if I wanted to go to church with her tomorrow, Sunday. I said, sure, I'll go with you. And when we got there, the pastor was they don't call it a stage in church. What do they call it? The stage?
The altar. Depends on the faith. Altar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It wasn't Catholic. It was a non-denominational. Anyway, he's up there, and he says, today we're starting a series of sermons on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Whoa. So I kept going back, and in fact, I asked Melina, I said, do you think he has a big book? And she said, I don't know, so let's go ask him. So we went up and asked him, and he didn't. And so we got him one, and the next Sunday, he's up there walking around with that big ugly, or I'm sorry, not ugly, bright yellow and blue copy of the big book under his arm, talking about Alcoholics Anonymous and the spirituality of our program and what an amazing program it is. And I just started going to church, and I'm still going. And I go every Sunday, whether Polly's in town or not. And I don't insist that she go. She wants to go, I'm delighted for her to go with me. If she doesn't, it's okay. I don't mind. It's okay. It's up to her. But I'm surprised at that. But I found a church where everybody, it's sort of like AA, you know. Everybody's got a smile on their face. They all know each other. They all love each other. They're all very comfortable being there. And I just find that very exciting that humans can get along that well with each other. And I like to not only enjoy that, but I like to contribute to it. So that little aside, not with, now you know why I have notes, because I'll... am I in this relationship just to feel needed or loved? I am in this relationship to give love. Needing to be loved is a heartbreak. It is a heartbreak as far as I'm concerned. You know, if I am here just because I need you to love me, I am due for a lot of heartache and unhappiness and disappointment and letdown. Because I got a guy that lives in my head named Igor, and Igor is all too happy to discuss me with me. Only Igor doesn't let me talk. He just makes me listen. And he likes to tell me that, you know, if they don't really love you, you know. I mean, you're ugly, you smell bad, your mother dresses you funny. I mean, come on, dude. Get real. And so I can't depend on you loving me, because my head will tell me that you probably really don't. But if I love you, I know I love you. When I love you, I know it. I know it. My heart tells me I do. It has nothing to do with my head. It's an affair of the heart, and the intellect has nothing to do with it. And so it feels just as good to love as it does to be loved. In fact, it feels better. So, because then I'm sure, now I know. I know I feel real, total, complete love, because I love you and I know it. So, no, I'm not in here to be loved. I've just sort of lost interest in trying to get anything from you loving me. I just like to love you. Feels a lot better. You know, I mean, I wish all of you could see you through my eyes. That's what I tell my girls all the time. I wish you could see you through my eyes. I wish you could see you through God's eyes. You know, it is amazing. Number 7.
Tradition 7. Each of us ought to strive to be fully self-supporting spiritually, emotionally, and physically. That means, well, for Dave and I, when we got married, we both have worked since we've been married. And because he's older than I am, he got to quit before I did. So, and he was retired before I retired. So what happened is that that was for the money part of our relationship. Spiritually, it's my responsibility to be self-supporting by going to AA, talking to my sponsor, making sure I pray. You know, it's like those are my responsibilities, is to make sure that my spiritual condition. And the book says that, you know, it's that we get a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I must maintain my spiritual condition. And that's not Dave's business. That's my business. Emotionally, Dave is, you know, I used to be just needing you to emotionally take care of me. And of course, when I need you to emotionally take care of me, it's never going to be enough. You're never going to love me enough or do enough or give me enough. There's never going to be enough. It's only when I get responsible for myself. Now, I am a person who has had a lot of depression. I'm a Bill Wilson. I have had a lot of depression. And I've been diagnosed as chronically depressed, manic depressed. I mean, you name it. I've been diagnosed it before coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here behind 3 suicide attempts. And one of the things that I know about that is if somebody tells you they're going to kill themselves, believe them. Because if they could be pulling your leg, but you don't know that. Because I'm here to tell you, it's if somebody gets to that place, it's really easy. It's very easy. It really does seem like a solution. But what I have found out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is that if I work with others, I don't get depressed. So that's what I do. Now, you may not need to sponsor as many people as I do. You may not need to be into as much service as I am. You may not need to do that, but I need to do that. And so Dave and I have different kinds of programs. I'm on the phone all the time, talking to women, doing the things that I do. Because I am a person who cannot stay in this head by myself. Because I'm not going to think good thoughts about myself. But if I'm working with you, then I have a sense of usefulness. And that sense of usefulness continues to carry me. I know today, I don't even know what I do for the women I work with. I'm not even sure. But I know they saved my life. They absolutely saved my life. Because if they didn't allow me to be, if they didn't bring me into their life, then I would die. I need that. I need to be able to work with somebody else. And I need to sponsor and I need to be sponsored. Those are things that are totally, I need that a lot. Now, some people will call and ask me to sponsor them. I never hear from them again. If it's a newcomer, I'll give them some conditions that they need to do. You know, they need to call me every day for a month, whatever. And pretty soon, you know, they don't want to do that anymore. Well, that's fine. That's, you know, you do whatever you need to do. These are my stipulations. But what happens is I get the privilege of working with other women. And it's just, it keeps me from being depressed. And I found the antidote. I found what Bill Wilson found, is that if he works with other alcoholics, it works. And that's what works for me. So that's what I have to do emotionally. It's not Dave's job to tell me to go to the gym. It's not Dave's job to watch my diet. That's not what he's supposed to do. That's my responsibility. It's my responsibility to keep myself in fit spiritual, physical, and emotional condition. That's what I'm here to do. I'm self-supporting through my own contribution. And what happens is when Dave takes care of all those things, then he comes to me, a healthy, whole person. And when I take care of those things, I come to him, a healthy, whole person. So what we do is that we take care of ourselves. And I don't know about you, but I have found out, as an alcoholic, taking care of myself is the hardest thing I do. I have all the answers for you. You just ask me, I can tell you what's wrong with you. But what happens is I need someone to help me. So I have to be sponsored, and then I have to take care of myself. And it's very difficult to do that. Because in order to take care of myself, I have to respect myself. And that's been a long, hard road to have some self-respect. Checklist for Tradition 7. Do I try to be the boss? Do I attempt to assume control over my partner and our relationship? Oh, I've tried. I'm glad that Dave has a good sense of self because he doesn't usually take to it very well. Do my needs for comfort or feeling of safety limit my partner's options? It's very important that I feel safe and protected. But what happens is that it doesn't limit, because what David just, for one thing, he's just got a disposition that I feel very, very safe with. And I'm really glad that God gave me that gift, because I feel safe. Do I accept responsibility for myself? Can I admit to my innermost self that my problems are of my own making? Do I try to manage and control through the purse strings? Well, Dave told you, we have one bank account, and the money's either there or it isn't. And nobody's got different bank accounts with different money in it. So for us, that's how we operate. Not everybody operates that way and have very successful relationships. That's just how we operate. Do I think that because something is good for me personally, that it is also good for my mate? And a lot of times I'll make suggestions and Dave will just say to me, well, I really don't want to do that, but I'm, you know, it's fine if you do that. And the same with me. He'll have a suggestion and I say, you know, I'm just really not up to doing that, but, you know, feel free. So a lot of times we want to do different things and we don't want to participate in it together. And we allow each other to do that. It's okay. It's okay. It's no offense against me because you don't want to do it. Do I deceive myself by thinking how unselfish and giving I am when in reality I'm giving only when I can do it on my terms? I used to be with this person who would do all these nice things for you, but if you didn't appreciate me appropriately, I resented you. So I didn't do it for fun and for free. And today I try to do it for fun and for free. And I don't know about that chart Dave was talking about, because, you know, it's like, okay, maybe it didn't show any negative on all that, but if you went inside my head, you'd find plenty of it. So, anyway, Tradition 8.
Tradition 8, our relationship should remain forever an unprofessional, free, and giving relationship each to the other. Our individual contributions to the relationship should be free and from the heart. Freely you have give, freely you have received, rather, freely give. In the first place, neither one of us are professionals. I'm not a professional carpenter or plumber or chef, or Polly's not a professional cook or housekeeper. And when it comes to chores like that, we just try to share. And most of the time, the one who is in need is the one who gets to do it. If you're hungry, fix yourself something to eat. I would make someone a really good wife because I know how to operate all the household equipment. I know how to iron shirts and all that stuff. So, you know, it's not a big deal to us. I think sometimes that taking out the garbage for a man is a chore, but if you are a man and you can take out the garbage when you notice the sack is full and you can do it without being threatened or even asked, I think that almost rises to an act of love with women. My daughter Melissa says, you know, I don't want to hear somebody say, can you wait a minute? You know, if I could wait a minute, I wouldn't even bother with you. Yeah. I'm busy, I'm cooking, I'm doing something. And so when I ask you, no, I can't wait a minute. And what I think needs to be done is that you not only take it out, but you look in the bottom of the garbage can, and if it needs to be washed out, wash it out and put a new sack in it. So I can tell from one of my own daughters, you know, that is an act of love to her.
Sanctum.
I'm sorry?
Sanctum.
Yeah. So, you know,
yeah,
so.
Sanctum.
So neither of us is all that interested in who's in charge. And nobody in our house wants to be in charge. We also have to avoid taking a professional or know-it-all attitude. You know, in the final analysis, personal opinions are just that. They're personal. It's okay if you don't agree with me. I'm not a certified expert on alcoholism or the 12 steps or sex or marriage or medicine or child psychology or spirituality or humility or any of that stuff. You know, I don't know when Polly should, as I said earlier, I don't know when Polly should call her sponsor or go to a meeting. You know, God has never whispered in my ear, "Hey, Dave, here's what I want you to get Polly to do." I guess if he has something for her, must give it to her directly. He doesn't come through me, and he has the exasperating habit of refusing to use email or text messaging. So, you know, it's hard to know exactly what he wants. But, you know, so when we understand that we are living individually by the principles of the 12 steps and collectively by the principles of the 12 traditions and maintaining a good relationship with God, then we get a sense of peace and serenity and safety, and it just reduces our self-centeredness. Being in touch with all these things allow us to be free, you know, and if our spirits are ever going to soar, we have to be free. Bill Wilson said, wrote one time, as Bill sees it, "When we come into AA, we find a greater personal freedom than any other society knows. We cannot be compelled to do anything. In that sense, our society is a benign anarchy." The word anarchy has a bad meaning to most of us, but I think that the idealist who first advocated the concept felt that if only men were granted absolute liberty and were compelled to obey no one, they would then voluntarily associate themselves in the common interest. AA is an association of the benign sort he envisioned. How can freedom be defined? What are the synonyms? What are the symptoms of freedom? What are the synonyms of freedom? You know, liberty, autonomy, lack of restrictions, unregulated, independence. You know, who wouldn't want all of these things? Freedom to me means that I, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and becoming sober, that I regain my ability to decide under what terms and conditions we agree to exist in this relationship. You know, I have some of my autonomy back. As I said earlier, we realize that our ego is not our amigo. You know, we quit wasting our energy trying to keep it fluffed up. We begin to understand that it's not ever going to be satisfied. Never. Our ego will never be satisfied and will never quit making demands on us. We present a consistent appearance. We abolish subterfuge as a strategy. We used to resort to honesty only when every means of deception had failed. Now we try to wear our honesty like a badge of honor. You know, we become transparent. The difference between what is inside and what you see on the outside just melts away. It becomes safe to be who we are. And if the inner voice ever says, "Don't sell Polly or anybody, don't tell them about this," then I make it a point to immediately contact them and tell them. We learn to make, honor, and keep commitments. There have been many times when my head would say, "We're not going to that home group meeting tonight." Those people in that meeting have never given a little pink rat's ass about me, and they never will. And I'm not going. And then I think, damn it, I have to make coffee. So I'm just going to go make the coffee and come back home and pout. So, you know, so I go to that meeting. I have never left that meeting thinking that. I have walked in thinking that, but I've never left that meeting thinking that. So my commitments save my life. They get me up off the couch when I'm being assaulted by my own head and get me to where I need to be to get out of the trap. We lose our obsession for judging other people. You know, live and let live becomes comfortable, even desirable. You know, sometimes I feel so relieved that I don't have to make any decisions for you. You know, I used to think, what are they going to do? And I just somehow would fret and worry. I don't have to do that anymore, you know. So I claim freedom for myself, and I unreservedly extend it to you. I grow increasingly unconcerned with being right. We've talked about that. We begin to, here's another one that I wrote that I really love. We begin to understand that right is an artificial construct disguised as metaphysical certitude. No, you lie. Just got to love it. Sometimes I just can't help it. You know, we begin with the help of our higher power to slowly develop a sense of integrity and reliability. Honesty becomes more important to us, not to win the approval of others, but to be at peace within ourselves. You know, I don't care what you know about me. Anything there is to know about me, it is okay with me if you know it. And if you don't know it and feel that you cannot go on with your life until you do know it, just ask me. I'll tell you whatever you want to know. I don't care. The words, if it's not yours, don't take it. If it's not true, don't say it. If it's not right, don't do it, take on just a whole new significance. You know, honesty just becomes easy. And the voice in our head that is so quick to disavow us just slowly has his ammunition withdrawn so that he can no longer shoot at us. So once freedom finds a resting place in our lives, in our hearts, in our psyches, it adds a dimension we just could not have dreamed of when we entered this fellowship. It is truly being reborn. Truly being reborn. So the checklist is, do these traditions accurately describe my behavior? If not, what needs to be changed? Do I try to sound like an expert on things? If so, why do I need to do that? Is my security at risk? Is my fear triggered? Does my ego feel threatened? Do I believe one or the other partner should be in charge based on their gender or experience or education or job or anything? Do I make an effort to understand Polly's opinions and views? Do I really listen and show respect for those opinions and views? Within the constraints of being a barbarian and a male, yes, I do. Who was my role model for a healthy relationship? You know, I feel very sad for my parents and for the people in their generation. You know, it just seems to me like they were so constricted. You know, they were just shoved into a mold and the door was slammed and there was no way out. And, you know, I obviously knew my parents very well. And I look back on them now and I don't really understand how either my mother or my father really felt about much of anything. I don't know. It was just, in my family, nobody talked about anything. And I don't have the sense that they were, I do have the sense that they were not particularly happy with their lives. I don't have the sense that they were distinctly unhappy, but I don't have the sense that they had any degree of freedom at all. But they were just sort of like trapped, you know, by the culture, by the society in which they lived. And, you know, and people like you and I, we have, through tragic circumstances, through having to face a crisis, through having to make a decision to live or die, go to AA and get sober or die, that crisis is the best thing that could have ever happened to us, because we have chosen to live. And we've been shown a way of life that is just something that just simply was not available to anybody before my generation, and certainly before yours. Can I give for fun and for free, requiring nothing in return? Or do I draw on quid pro quo as a strategy? After millions of years, the sun, which so generously supplies the earth with all the energy it needs to flourish, does not say, you owe me. Do I believe my generation, generosity toward my mate should be situational, conditional, or limited? Do I charge Polly a fee for being in a relationship with me? You know, and so how expensive is my love and affection? Do I take hostages in my relationship? Do I feel that my mate belongs to me? And do I really understand that I will reap what I sow? What goes around comes around. So, you want to stop there?
No, we got to go to
a half hour.
Half hour. We have to go another half hour. Tradition 9, our relationship ought never be organized or under the control of only one partner. When I was a little girl growing up, I'm an only child. I grew up where in my household, it appeared my dad was the boss, my mom was there, and I was there. Now, in my generation, the mother did not work in the household, but my mother did. So my mother worked and my dad worked. So they both were bringing in the income. And sometime my mother was a nurse, so she made more than my dad did. So it was just one of those things. But yet, it appeared that to me that my mom had no say-so. And I had this idea about my mother and my dad, and I had the idea that he controlled the relationship and she did whatever he said do. And then my dad died, and he was pretty young when he died. He died at age 60. And my mother was widowed for the next 27 years. And I saw an opinion totally change. My dad died, I was 1 year sober. And it's one of those things, if you have amends to make, make them, because you never know. And at any rate, my dad died, and I watched my mom, who I thought was this very weak person who just didn't do how responsible and all the stuff she did and made it look like he did it. And it was just this crazy thing. And by then, by the time I realized all this, Dave and I were married. And I can remember my mother was just this like really closed in kind of person. And sometimes that would just make me crazy, stand up for yourself, you know, all this kind of stuff. And Dave used to say to me, Polly, what your mother does doesn't seem to make, you know, you don't understand it, but she likes it like that. Leave her alone. Because I thought she needed to do all this crazy running around and craziness I did. And she lived in this little bitty town in Texas. And she was very happy to live in that little bitty town. In my opinion, live this really boring life. Now, but like Dave says, it wasn't boring to her. So, you know, it's the one of those kind of things that people, just because it doesn't look like it works for me, doesn't mean that it doesn't work for somebody else. And Davis says this all the time, you know, I'll get myself all booked up and I'll have too much going on and I can't do it all and I'll be complaining, and he just kind of sits back and he says, you're in charge of your day timer. And he won't take responsibility. So what happens is I'm back having to take responsibility and not being able, you know, to do this organization like it should be under my control. And if I've overbooked myself or I'm doing this stuff, you should bail me out of it and help me. And what happens is our relationship is not organized. And if I get myself all booked up and I'm really exhausted, Dave's very supportive. He says, honey, I'm so sorry that you've done this to yourself. And so I, one more time, you know, I have to realize that these are the things that I do to myself. One of the things that also happens is that we have defiant individualism. Dr. Tebolt said in AA Comes of Age that there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic: grandiosity and defiant individuality. I have that. Now, when I was married the first time, my husband was a military man. And he came, he was gone a lot. He was just gone a lot, and that's what happens. And I look today at how many deployments people have to Iran and Afghanistan and all that, and I can't believe it, because when we were doing Vietnam, there was a lot of deployments, but nothing like that. So at any rate, he was gone a lot, years at a time. He was gone. And, you know, when I did the house, I did it like I wanted it. And he just came in and enjoyed it. If he didn't like it, he didn't say so. So if I wanted to hang a picture, I just hang it. I did not consult him to whether he wanted that picture hung there or not. So I had the total organization of the house. And he absolutely, literally had no say-so about what I was doing. Now, Dave is not like that. Dave has a lot of opinions. He has a lot of opinions about the furniture we buy, about the paint we put on the walls, about the pictures we hang. He has a lot of opinions. And I can't just go hang something. And then he'll come in and say, I don't like that. And I'm like, how dare you question that? What do you mean you don't like it? And one of the greatest gifts that happened is Dave and I, we, in order to make our house sell and go through in Birch Bay, we left our furniture for the person who bought it. So when we moved to Florida, we had to get some new furniture. And we walked into a furniture store, and it started, I like that, no, I don't like that. I like that, no, I don't like that. And then finally, I looked at this one thing, and I said, oh, I like that. And Dave said, I do too. And I know the people in the furniture store thought I was crazy. I'm standing there going, oh my God, we agree, we agree. Oh my God, you like it too, you really like it? And Dave is like, oh please. But that's kind of how we are. We're just, that, you know, we have very different taste. And Dave likes tons of color. And I like very, and I'm very conservative. So what happens is I hung up a shower curtain, and he said, buff curtain on a buff wall and a buff floor. Ooh, how gorgeous. And so, I mean, he's got opinions. So I can't control the situation. So what has happened is that I have learned a lot of partnership being married to Dave. I have learned that he has opinions and that he has a right to his opinions, and we need to talk about things. Do you like this picture? And all of this, I can't just go off and just buy everything and expect him to like it. That's what I have learned. I can't make decisions about what we're going to do and what we're, you know, without consulting him. Now, I have done this a lot. And Michael's not in here right now because she stepped outside with Karen. But her and I, she sponsored this woman named Susie. And Susie was living in a halfway house and was not doing very well in this halfway house. And Michael calls me on the phone and she says, she's in Georgia and I'm in California. And she says, you've got to do something. He is robbing the spirit of Susie in that halfway house. And so what I do, now I've not consulted Dave about this. What I do is I call Susie up and I tell her to get out of that halfway house, to meet me on the street corner at such and such a time. She is coming to live with me. And Dave gets home and I inform him of this. Now, it turned out to be a fabulous situation. But can you imagine somebody just arbitrarily making a decision and doing that? Now, I've done that twice. I haven't done it once. I've done it twice. And the only one that we talked about is the one that didn't really work out. So what has happened is that I have done this twice. Now, fortunately, the last one, Dave just really loved her and knew her and all that kind of stuff, so it was way different. But what happens is that I'm the one who does it more than him. And I will accept engagements that people ask us for dinner and stuff like that, and I will accept them without speaking to him. And a lot of times I'm really embarrassed because I have to call back and tell him we can't do that. I didn't discuss this with Dave first, and he's got another plan. He's doing something else. So what I'm learning, now I'm a slow learner. It's taken me a long time and a lot of years of marriage. But for the most part, it's still not 100%. But for the most part, I usually check with Dave before I make a decision that is going to include both of us. And I have stopped taking control of our relationship and making it my business and not any of his business. So I'm sure none of you have that kind of problem, but I have that kind of problem. So at any rate, the checklist for tradition 9. Do I try to be the boss? Well, I do, but thank God, again, I'm saying Dave has a good sense of self, so he takes care of standing up for himself. Am I mature enough to understand the principles of AA in my relationship, even if no one makes me do so, with a sense of personal responsibility? And that is that each of us has our own autonomy, and I need to allow him to have it as well as me. Do I exercise patience and humility in the things I do in my relationship? I don't know if it's age, I don't know if it's hanging around AA for a lot of years, but I am so much more patient than I used to be. I have a lot more patience and tolerance than I used to. Do I assume responsibility or do I try to take on authority? And I think I've kind of gotten better about that. Don't do that so much anymore. Have I learned how and when to step aside gracefully when I begin to overstep my bounds? And, you know, it's sometimes you have to say, geez, I'm sorry I did that. You know, I spoke for you and I shouldn't have spoke for you. And I will take responsibility for calling and telling them we can't do it. I did it, so I have to take responsibility for it. Who decides who does what in the day-to-day business of our relationship? We both do. This is a partnership. But I'll tell you, partners need to learn how to talk to each other. And Dave and I have had to learn how to communicate and talk to each other. Am I a peace-at-any-price person? Dave and I both used to be. We did not like conflict of any kind. So what we would do is just whatever it took to keep peace. Tradition 10.
You guys just about dead from...
Yeah, are you guys dead? Everybody looks like they're just about spaced out. Yeah, why don't we do the next three tomorrow?
Break it off here?
Yeah, let's
come back later. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's just break it off. Yeah, everybody's just exhausted.
Okie doke.
Okay.
You got it.
All right. Take a quick...